It's time. Time for stimulating talk. Time for thought-provoking conversation. Time for the Lisa Wexler Show on WICC 600. Turn on your brain and get the real scoop on today's topics and events. Here is Lisa Wexler.
And we are broadcasting live from Radio Row here in New Hampshire. Tomorrow is the first primary in the nation, in case you haven't heard. I'm Lisa Wexler. Welcome to the show today. Our call lines are open for you at 203-333-9422. You can call me at 203-333-9422. And we are having a great time in the last couple of days. My staff and I have been here, and we have seen and heard everybody in person. But guess what? We've got a wonderful treat for you, Tulsi Gabbard, who is not only running for president, but she is somebody as a woman who has accomplished an enormous number of firsts. She is the first military combat veteran to be running. She is the first person of Samoan ancestry to, I think, serve in the U.S. Congress. Is that right, Tulsi? Mm-hmm.
The first a voting member, because there is a delegate from American Samoa, which is still a territory of the United States. It's where I was born. But like American Samoa, Guam, Puerto Rico, the Virgin Islands, they cannot cast their votes on the House floor.
What do you think about that? I know it's a digression from your run as president, yeah. But actually people from the audience yesterday, I was at a Biden event, a woman said she's of Puerto Rican descent. She wants to hear more about why Puerto Rico isn't a state. Obviously, D.C. doesn't have proper representation.
Exactly.
What do you think about all of that?
I think it's a big problem.
It is,
given,
right?
Well, at least for D.C., you know, their whole thing is taxation without representation. And it's just, it's terrible because Congress can block funding for the District of Columbia's basic services, that their budget really has to be approved by Congress. And there have been there's been legislation that the District of Columbia's government has passed having to do with cannabis, for example, legalization of cannabis, that Congress leaders have blocked because they disagreed with that policy.
Yeah.
And there have been other examples of that. I'm a big believer in self-determination and, you know, local governance. I come from serving on the city council and the state house. And so whether it's for Puerto Rico, there's also a conversation in American Samoa about whether or not American Samoans should be born with citizenship, because they're not, unlike Puerto Rico.
Why not? Aren't they also a
territory? They're born U.S. nationals. They are a territory, but they're, for some reason in the past, there was a difference made there.
What is the difference
in
real
American
life between
Samoans
a U.S. national and a U.S. citizen?
The difference is that you have to be naturalized if you want to become a U.S. citizen. So you don't get all of the same rights to be, and you don't get a U.S. passport because you're not a U.S. citizen.
So when you're born in American Samoa, are you a citizen of any country?
You are a U.S. national.
So and you're not actually a citizen
Correct.
Of any country?
Correct.
How many people are in Samoa?
It's a good question. I'm not sure what the current population is, but there's a case that's being argued before the Supreme Court right now about their legal status. And there are fights, not fights, but there's disagreement between nationals in American Samoa, some who want to be born with citizenship and others who don't, largely because of the unique culture and laws in American Samoa that still give them some independence. For example, if you wanted to go and buy a house in American Samoa, the land and houses that have been passed down from generation to generation, unless you're a member of the family, you can't buy that land. You can't own that land.
You have to be a member of that family?
Correct.
Yeah, that wouldn't work. That wouldn't fly here in America.
No, but there are still tribal chiefs there. Chiefs within the community who have a lot of influence. It's a very different culture, and I think the people there are trying to figure out how they can preserve the Samoan culture, which is a really beautiful family-based, God-based culture, but also make sure that they're getting their rights as Americans.
So, Tulsi Gabbard, you're a woman of tremendous grit and strength. I want to ask you something, bringing us back to today's politics. Why did you vote present with respect to the impeachment proceedings in the House versus yes or no? Why only present?
Because I saw two dangerous outcomes. that I had been warning against even before this whole impeachment process began, is that this process being driven forward in a very hyper-partisan way would only further divide an our already divided country, which it has. And second, I saw how going through this process, because of the nature of how it went, would very much increase the likelihood of Trump getting reelected. We're seeing how that has become true, in that his approval ratings right now are higher than they've ever been.
And the RNC has raised more money than they've ever raised.
Exactly. And so then, you know, it's increased the likelihood Democrats will lose a lot of seats in the House in the next election.
But then why not vote no? Then why just
because
say,
Trump's
know?
Not innocent. Oh. And I didn't want, you know, he's not innocent. And to my Republican colleagues who kind of put their partisan blinders on and say, he's perfect. That's not true. But also seeing in my own party how for a lot of folks, they disagree with the outcome of the last election. They disagree with Trump's policies, as do I. I disagree with a lot of his policies. That's why I'm running for president, to be able to give the American people that choice to remove him from office at the ballot box.
If Donald Trump asked you to serve as a member of his cabinet, he's very well known for bragging that he is all in favor of military combat vets and is trying to allocate a lot of his budget to vets, and you are a veteran. Would you serve?
No, because my interest is not in holding a title or a position. My interest and why I'm running for president is because as it relates to veterans, as it relates to our military, Donald Trump has said one thing but done another. You know, he promised during his campaign to bring our troops home from Afghanistan and Iraq and the Middle East. Well, he has deployed 15,000 troops since May of last year.
What would you do about
alone.
That? I mean, it's a dilemma for every U.S. leader now, because we're there and they're dependent on us, and they say that if we leave, things will only get worse. So what would you do?
Things have gotten worse because we've been there in these countries, because we've waged these regime change wars in countries like Iraq and Libya and Syria. So this is what sets me apart from the other candidates running for president, is I bring the experience of serving as a soldier myself, not just for a couple of years or a short time, but actually serving for almost 17 years of having deployed.
Thank you so much.
It's my honor to be able to serve, but you know, I've served on two deployments to the Middle East, a total of almost 2 years. My first deployment during the height of the war in Iraq in 2005, where every day we were confronted with the high human cost of war. And taking that experience combined with my 7 years in Congress, where I have been focused on the Foreign Affairs Committee, the Armed Services, and the Homeland Security Committee on our nation's foreign policy and national security interests, these experiences have prepared me to walk in on day one, where as president and commander-in-chief, I would end our wasteful regime change wars that have not made us any safer, work to end this new Cold War and nuclear
president
arms
Trump
race.
Tried to get us out of ISIS. He got a tremendous amount of flack because he said we had won against ISIS. We had done what we could do. Let's get out. And do you remember what happened? The whole press, everybody attacked him. We can't leave. We left the Kurds.
You're talking about
abandoned.
Syria. You're talking about Syria.
Yes, I am. Yes.
So here's the thing. When Trump first announced, I guess it was December of 2018, that he wanted to get our troops out of Syria, I publicly agreed with him and said, yes, this is the right thing to do, but that it must be done properly. His problem was not in his goal of getting our troops out of Syria. The problem was with his failure to execute that withdrawal plan in a way that did not leave the Kurds out to slaughter by the Turkish government, which is unfortunately what happened. What he should have done, and what I would have done in this situation, is to make sure that those Kurds who were integral in the defeat of ISIS were supported by us in getting the kind of security guarantees and negotiations that they have been wanting to pursue for a long time with the Syrian government, with Russia, with the other entities who actually are in that space to protect themselves from the Turks, who have been threatening their existence for a long time, and therefore then taking that responsible withdrawal to bring our troops back home.
Tulsi Gabbard, your people are asking me to wrap it up. I could talk to you all day.
I know. We should do that another time.
I wish that you would. And we broadcast primarily to Southern Connecticut, but the signal reaches from Manhattan to Rhode Island.
Amazing.
It's big 600 AM. So let me just invite you. If you're going to come to Connecticut as your campaign rolls on, you will likely be fundraising in Fairfield County. You will likely be fundraising in Greenwich or Westport or somewhere in the Gold Coast. Please do come back on the Lisa Wexler Show, whether in person or by phone. Make sure I know about the event so I can come.
Okay.
All right.
Sounds good.
Tulsi Gabbard, what a pleasure. And
thank you, Lisa.
Thank
great
you
to
really
see you.
For everything.
Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. We'll be right back. The Lisa Wexler Show, broadcasting live from New Hampshire on the day before the primary.